The trip from hell, is this the worst plane ride you've ever had?
Oh, yes.
Really?
It's even worse than the private plane ride I took on the Ticket Flyaway.
That almost crashed.
That's a bold statement.
Because we fully experienced the terrible twos. We've not really experienced the terrible twos with our daughter. She's been great. But over the weekend, she wasn't feeling well, and we had to take a very long flight.
She wanted the world to know about it.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm still experiencing PTSD after that. And I think my wife is as well. Like, we can't even talk about it. It was so bad. When the day came to an end on Sunday and we finally got home and we finally put her to bed, we just sat there and we couldn't even talk about it. We were both so stunned. And then yesterday we really couldn't talk about it.
Seems like that's the way my kids were every day when they were growing up.
This is really we've had tantrums and all of the normal two-year-old stuff, but we've never had a day like this. Really a weekend like this.
I'm with her. I was exhausted yesterday. Travel is a beatdown.
It's a total beatdown. I used to really look forward to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't at all, unless I'm behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Like a car trip I still look forward to, but going to the airport and getting on a plane, that used to be magic to me, and now I dread it.
I'm right there with you.
Thanks, 9/11.
I don't know if it was that so much.
Yeah, I don't think it was that.
Thanks a lot, Bin Laden.
But okay, yeah, it was a terrible day.
I think it's the decreased room on a plane, decreased good customer service, increased amount of travelers, increased amount of delays,
decreased number of flights. So we're just packing more people onto fewer flights.
Yeah.
So before 9/11, help me out here. Did we had security lines, right?
Yep.
Something changed with 9/11. All right. Was it shoe bomber was before 9/11? No, that was after 9/11.
So one of the big changes after 9/11 was if you didn't have a ticket, you couldn't go past security.
Okay. Right. Because people used to be able to pick you up right when you walked off the plane.
Yep.
Walk to the gate.
Yeah.
And then I think security also tightened post 9/11.
So we used to put we didn't put shoes in the scanner though before the shoe bomber.
Right.
Whenever
seems
that
like
was.
You just walked through a thing.
We just walked through metal detectors?
Yeah, I think so.
Didn't take off belts or anything though?
No.
Right.
Mm-mm. Well, when was it when we didn't even do that? Is that before we were born?
When was the shoe bomber?
That was, I'm going to guess, like 2002.
When was the shoe
What was bomber? His name? Richard Ramirez.
December 22nd, 2001?
Okay.
Reed was his name.
That was right after Reed. 9/11.
Right after 9/11.
Huh. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what flying was like, let's say, in the mid-80s, what was flying like? I wasn't really flying then, but...
Well, you could go to the gates, you know, whether you had a ticket or not. You had basically had free reign of the airport, or free run of the airport, but you still had to go through security, but it was just a metal detector. You could take whatever you wanted on a plane, like you could take a full bottle of water, take whatever food, where now you have to check all that or empty it out, or it's got to be 3 ounces or less. That all came in post 9/11. The whole 3 ounces or less thing. You used to be able to take gallons and gallons of water on a plane if you wanted to. They didn't really check you for dangerous materials or anything like that other than guns.
So just guns was all they were really looking for.
Maybe knives. Maybe you couldn't take a knife, but I'm not even sure about that.
Well, that's a good one. I don't know.
Guns,
I think,
for
below
sure.
A certain length, you know, below a certain length you could take on a plane.
Yeah. Like a little knife. Pocket knife or something. Yeah. Yeah, a lot definitely changed around 9/11 and with the Richard Reed, Gordo's guy, shoe bomber.
Not my guy. Remember how creepy looking that guy was?
Yeah. So, yes, the story of the plane ride from hell and really the trip from hell with a couple of funny moments coming up at 8:15 this morning. A couple of charity items here early. Thanks to the good folks at Mullen & Mullen for having us out yesterday to their golf tournament, benefiting many local charities, Friends of Mullen & Mullen, out at Las Colinas Country Club. We had a great time out there. And we talked to Shane Mullen from Mullen & Mullen. And what a nice guy. Had a great visit with him. Really appreciate Shane having us out there at the golf tournament. Also, for Mullen & Mullen sponsoring so many of our events here at the Ticket, like Ticket Stock, our title sponsor, Donnie's DFW Domino's Classic, and Mullen & Mullen really gives back to the community. It was really great to talk to Shane and his father out there, and just had a really, really good time. And he was telling me, and in the 30-plus years we've been doing this show, it's always great to hear from P1s and maybe something this show has inspired them to do or just helps them get through the morning. We just never get tired of those stories. It's always very thoughtful of them to share with us, and we love hearing those stories. Well, Shane told me that many, many, many years ago, he was really interested in all of my bike trip stories.
Mm.
And so much so that it inspired him to get a bike and start riding. And I love hearing that. Of all the things that P1s have told me over the years, it's right up there near the top of what means the most to me is when I hear that just me talking about how much I love to ride the bike, it inspired them to get on a bike and maybe they lost weight, they got healthy, they took these great trips. P1s have told me it turned into a bonding experience with their son or their daughter or their wife, and now they take bike trips everywhere. Just really great to hear those stories, and Shane is one of those. He said, I got a bike, and now it's everything to me. He said, it's my therapy. It's my fitness. I look forward to it. And so we had a good talk about the bike.
It's awesome.
And I told him, and this is the truth, and I rode my bike yesterday, that of all of the bike rides that I've done in my life, 10,000 or more probably. I tried to do some rough math yesterday. I think I've probably taken somewhere between 10 and 15,000 bike rides in my life that I've looked forward to every single one of them. There's not one bike ride that I didn't want to go on or take. Like, I've been almost giddy before each one of them. Like yesterday, I couldn't wait to get on the bike.
You don't think, oh gosh, I have to go ride the bike.
Yeah, I've never thought that.
I'll do it, but I really don't want to.
So really fun going through that mental exercise with Shane and just reminding myself how much I love the bike, and really appreciate him sharing that with me. One other charity note, I was very sad to see that Dallas's longtime great charity, City Square, is out of funding and they will close at the end of the year.
Oh, no.
Once one of our biggest nonprofits here in the Metroplex, they're going to turn over their campus and their programs to other providers. They have been around since about 1990, taking care of the poor in Dallas, Fort Worth, mainly Dallas, a Dallas nonprofit, and they're out of business at the end of the year. Really sad to see that. So many great charitable causes around Dallas-Fort Worth, and you wish you could support all of them. But apparently they fell on hard times. And City Square holds a special place in my heart because it was a great P1 from City Square that emailed me about 3 hours before the Steve Martin Steep Canyon Rangers show back in 2010, 2009, somewhere in there, and said, I've got an extra ticket and a ticket to the meet and greet if you want to meet your hero.
Oh, wow.
And he sent the email around 2 that afternoon. I was on a bike ride, and I came home around 5 and saw it. And I thought, oh, my God, is the ticket going to be gone? Have I blown my chance? And so I hurried up, and I emailed him back and just sat there patiently. And he emailed back about 10 or 15 minutes later and said, I've still got it. Meet me at so-and-so at this door at the Meyerson. And we'll get you into the meet and greet. And so I panic showered, and then I struggled for a moment deciding what I should wear to meet Steve, like a woman. Is this a shirt he would like? No, he'll think that's stupid. Should I wear these pants? No.
Maybe a picture of him with the arrow through his head that went through
right. Your... I don't want to look too silly. I don't want to one-up him.
I don't want to be a try-hard.
Right. I just want to look pretty normal. And I got down there in time, and he met me at the door and took me back and got in line for the meet and greet. And I got my 15 seconds with Steve. And that's on the drive down to the Meyerson when I was rehearsing in my head, what am I going to say? What am I going to say to him when I meet him? And it was my turn. I walked up to him, and I shook his hand. I said, hi, Steve. My name's Craig. I just want to thank you for all the joy you've brought into my life. Oh. And he goes, oh, I'm sure it wasn't joy. And I said, no, it was. And then we turned to the camera, and then I walked off stage right.
I'm sure it wasn't joy.
So very sad to see City Square going under this year.
So that was part of their screening, was just looking at your behavior. Then came the Customs Air Security Officers Program. That's the Sky Marshals. That started around that time because of those hijackings. Yeah. And then there was the Explosive Detection K-9 Team Program that started around that time. They started putting dogs at the airports. And then it wasn't until 73 when they required all commercial airliners to use X-ray machines and metal detectors and personal searches to screen passengers. So that started in 73 when we started having to go through the lines and the metal detectors and all that. But even with that, passengers were still allowed to arrive 30 minutes before boarding. Think about how sweet that would be.
Yeah.
Hey, as long as you get here 30 minutes before your plane. And family and friends, as you guys mentioned, were allowed at the gates. And security was oftentimes then outsourced to underpaid contractors, which I think is still kind of the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do they not do that anymore? Or I guess TSA is all government now.
Yeah. I think so.
And I didn't remember this. In 2008, do you remember when they started using AIT at airports, Advanced Imaging Technology?
Yeah.
And it was so controversial that they removed the units in 2013.
Wasn't that the thing that you stepped in, raised your hands?
See, that's what
that's
I thought.
It's still going.
I thought it was still going.
That's what I stepped in this last weekend flying.
But is this somehow different technology than it was then?
Maybe.
Or did they eventually put it back in?
Come to think of it, I haven't had to step in one of those things and raise my hands in forever. But maybe that's because I'm TSA pre.
That's why.
Okay. Pre.
Because the unwashed masses of which George and I are a part, we still have to do that. Where they videotape your junk.
Yeah, they always used to choose hot women to go in there.
Yeah, do you think that's a little disturbing? Because they can look through your clothes. With those machines.
Even our security folks are just interested in the privacy.
Yeah, they can't handle it. They want to see your bathroom areas. So that's why it started, was that explosion in 1955 when some kid blew up his mom.
I've never heard that story before.
I hadn't either.
Yeah, that's how it happened. And now you know the rest of the story.
Would it be better just to have a card in your wallet?
That's what the backup is, I guess, to the Tesla phone business.
And you can't find your wallet.
Yeah. There's going to be a downside to any one particular one until they start doing, I guess, bioretinal scans where you get in the car, it scans your eyes and knows that you're an authorized driver. And then people will start somehow faking retinas and then...
And you got a de-retina scan when you turn in the car and...
Yeah, you got to figure out how to clear it out of the entertainment center that holds your retinal scan info.
Email and password in some screen in front of you to do it.
Are you guys very good about that, about completely wiping the computer before you turn in a vehicle?
Huh?
Uh-oh.
What?
Y'all don't do that.
What do you mean?
Wiping the vehicle computer?
Yeah, with your personal information, all that stuff that's in there.
Do I put my personal information in?
Some people program in, you know, their home destination. That'll be in there.
I don't.
Of course,
do that.
It syncs. It downloads a lot of your phone stuff when you plug your phone in.
I don't really think I put too much of that in there.
I'm gonna say relish on that.
Still best practice to go through. Always look up before you turn in a car how to wipe the computer of your information.
By the way, you know what just made you sound like a boomer, George? When you said, could you put a credit card type thing in your wallet? I think wallets are becoming dinosaurs.
We don't have wallets?
I've seen so many people these days just walk up to a cash register with a phone.
Yeah.
I think everything is on their phone these days.
Really?
People still have to carry their, but they have to carry their ID, right?
So I've almost completely stopped carrying a wallet. If I go somewhere, I will take my driver's license and a credit card, and that's all I take with me everywhere I go. And it's so much less cumbersome.
I do that pretty frequently. Just carry those two items, one credit card and driver's license. But I've never found a good way of securing it. And when, because I also carry my phone in my pocket, mm-hmm. and half the time I pull the phone out of the pocket and somebody back behind me has to, excuse me, sir, and they'll hand me my driver's license because it's come out of my pocket falling out while I've taken my phone out.
I have little pockets in my big pockets, and the little pockets are like
you
the
have
size,
Russian nesting dolls they're like, of pockets?
Check this out. Check this out, guys.
All right.
See that pocket?
Yeah.
Like the coin pocket?
And the credit cards fit in there.
Yeah.
And so that secures the credit cards.
Is that still a holdover from pocket watches? Is that why we still have that pocket?
I don't know.
It's usually on the right side if you're wearing the jeans or pants. And they'll have the tiny top pocket inside the big regular pocket.
I don't think so.
That's not like
because,
an idiot.
Like in every pair of shorts that I have, it has those credit card pockets in both pockets.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're these days specifically made for credit cards, driver's license, things like that.
Well, how could they these days be made that when they used to always have those?
Because fewer people are carrying a wallet.
No.
I'm saying they've always been around for whatever, coin or pocket.
Oh, those pockets?
Or, yeah. Like, what were they originally for?
I think probably coins. Originally for coins, but I don't ever remember them until recently being in both pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Like in most of my pants and shorts.
Only in the right side of these jeans.
Yeah, that's a traditional, more traditional coin pocket.
Yeah, I got nothing.
You don't have any?
Mm-mm. Look, you didn't check.
I just did.
No, you're not the right area, right there. Right here.
Oh yeah, I do. Yeah. Never used it. Never knew it was there.
You didn't even know it was there?
No.
You just now found out it was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was originally for... I think it's a pocket watch. Not coins, but pocket watch. Did people wear pocket watches with jeans?
I don't know if that would... Yeah, I guess that would fit in there.
I'm going to start carrying around one of those. I think that's a cool look. Somebody asks the time, and I'll pull out the pocket watch and put my monocle in and read the pocket watch time for them. Talking about the evolution of airport security. We were wondering this earlier in the show today. Because September 11th, of course, changed a lot of our airport security measures and the rigmarole that we have to go through when we get to the airport. Well, I didn't realize airport security went this far back. Do you know the first incident we had that made them start thinking about airport security? What year would you say that is? Commercial flying started in the 30s, is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
It's going to be something way back there, the way you're setting this up.
Or is it?
So I'll say something in the 40s.
Okay. George?
I'll say after a hijacking in the 70s.
Ooh, good guess, George. No, it was actually November 1st, 1955. It was a United Airlines flight 629 from Denver to Portland. And just minutes after takeoff, the plane exploded over a beet farm in Longmont, Colorado, and all 44 people on board died.
Wow.
So the federal investigators determined that the explosion was the result of a dynamite bomb that was checked in a checked bag, and it was a passenger's son that confessed to placing the sack of dynamite in his mother's suitcase.
Oh my gosh.
Because he was looking to cash in on his mother's life insurance.
Wow.
And I've never heard of this before. And so he blew up the plane to try to kill his mom and killed 43 other people in addition to his mom. And after that, it was the first major act of criminal violence on a U.S. airline flight. And in the years that followed that, they started getting more serious about that and screening for dynamite in luggage. Kind of looking through it a little bit. You ain't got any dynamite in there, do you? No, sir.
No.
We ain't got any dynamite, you see. And all the accents they had back then. So, but the first real security measure is 1961. That was the addition of armed guards on planes, but it was only when requested by the FBI or by the airlines. So if it was for some specific reason they wanted this flight to have armed guards, they would put them on that flight. Then, in the late 60s and early 70s, and this is where you kind of were on to something there, Giorgio, during the heyday of the skyjacking.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they started doing psychological profiling by ticket agents at the gates. They would look at the behavior of people coming up to the ticket counters. And if someone was acting suspicious or wouldn't make eye contact, they would report that to someone, security personnel there at the airport. So that was part of their screening, was just looking at your behavior. Then came the Customs Air Security Officers Program. That's the Sky Marshals. That started around that time because of those hijackings. Yeah. And then there was the Explosive Detection K-9 Team Program that started around that time. They started putting dogs at the airports. And then it wasn't until 73 when they required all commercial airliners to use X-ray machines and metal detectors and personal searches to screen passengers. So that started in 73 when we started having to go through the lines and the metal detectors and all that. But even with that, passengers were still allowed to arrive 30 minutes before boarding. Think about how sweet that would be.
Yeah.
Hey, as long as you get here 30 minutes before your plane. And family and friends, as you guys mentioned, were allowed at the gates. And security was oftentimes then outsourced to underpaid contractors, which I think is still kind of the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do they not do that anymore? Or I guess TSA is all government now.
Yeah, I think so.
And I didn't remember this. In 2008, do you remember when they started using AIT at airports, Advanced Imaging Technology?
Yeah.
And it was so controversial that they removed the units in 2013.
Wasn't that the thing that you stepped in, raised your hands?
See, that's what
I thought. Still going.
I thought it was still going.
That's what I stepped in this last weekend flying.
But is this somehow different technology than it was then?
Maybe.
Or did they eventually put it back in?
Come to think of it, I haven't had to step in one of those things and raise my hands in forever. But maybe that's because I'm TSA pre.
That's why.
Okay. Pre.
Because the unwashed masses of which George and I are a part, we still have to do that. Where they videotape your junk.
Yeah, they always used to choose hot women to go in there.
Yeah, do you think that's a little disturbing? Because they can look through your clothes with those machines.
Even our security folks are just interested in the privacy.
Yeah, they can't handle it. They want to see your bathroom areas.
No,
so that's why it started, was that explosion in 1955 when some kid blew up his mom.
I've never heard that story before.
I hadn't either.
Yeah, that's how it happened. And now you know the rest of the story.
Right now, travel stories from over the weekend. Both George and I took trips over the weekend. George, you started summering at Cape Cod.
Yes, indeed.
And had a good trip. And I also went to the Northeast. We were not that far from each other.
No, all those states pretty much run together up there.
You were in Massachusetts and I was in Connecticut.
Dang, we were close.
We were really close. We flew into LaGuardia in New York. You flew into Boston.
Boston, just off the harbor.
So we left on Friday, and last week, my wife and daughter had been under the weather. And my daughter was still a little sniffly and a little cranky. And she is now almost three. She'll be three in August, and we have the best little girl. She's just been amazing. We love her so much. And 95% of the time, she is in a great mood and a very happy young lady and lots of fun. Loves to be silly, and she's just a joy. But the 5% of the time when she is in her terrible twos mindset, she can be a handful.
Luckily, she's
10 months into her twos, and we really haven't had too many horrible, terrible twos episodes. And as I told you, last May, she took her first flights. We flew to Boston for a graduation, Cincinnati for a graduation, both long flights with delays, and she was great. Give her a tablet on the flight. She was fine. She was in good mood in the airport even during the... She's been a really great traveler so far.
And by tablet, you mean just some sort of screen, not some sort of narcotic.
Right. Yes, I should have made that clear. Yes, a little kid's tablet that's pink and you
here,
put
take
Sesame
one of these,
Street on.
Right. Technology.
Yeah,
stuff.
We haven't done that yet, but after this weekend, maybe we will. So we were expecting relatively peaceful travel this time because she's always been so good. And the flight up was not bad. She was really well behaved on the flight up, so nothing to complain about there. And she did give us some really funny moments during this trip. We flew up with the grandparents and we had a Vrbo reserved, but the host canceled on us 10 days before the trip.
Whoa.
And I was irate. And I turned into customer service junior, and I complained about it, and they tried to help out by finding another place, but this late date, we couldn't find another place, so we ended up having to get this hotel in Stamford, Connecticut, is where we were going, for our niece's first communion. That was on Saturday. We left on Friday, and we check into this hotel, and our daughter liked the hotel. We had to get a mattress from the hotel and put it on the floor. But, you know, kids love hotels because it's new and there's a new remote control to play with.
Yeah.
So she was all for it. But we do not let her sleep with us. We have been told that that's a very bad habit to start, is when you let the kids sleep in the bed with you.
Yeah, probably.
So we have not gone down that road at all. And we have never really let her sleep in our room outside of the bassinet when she was first born. But here we had to share rooms, so we had the mattress on the floor that she slept on. And so we tried to put her to bed, and then we would try to stay up maybe and read. There was a little living room adjacent to it. But she would not have that. She wanted us to go to sleep when she went to sleep. So we relented. We were all tired. But it was really funny. We got in bed, and she's in her little bed. And then every 30 seconds, you would hear her get out of bed and footsteps. And she would walk around to my side of the bed. And she would say, "Daddy all tucked in?" "Yes, Daddy's all tucked in."
"Got it."
"Okay." And then she would walk back and get in her bed. And then 30 seconds later, she would get out of her bed and walk up to my wife's side. And she would say, "Mommy's feet nice and warm?" "Yes, Mommy's feet are nice and warm." "Okay." And then she would go back and get in her bed. And that continued for about 30 minutes.
Boy, the stall tactics are obvious yet pretty impressive sometimes.
They're amazing. And finally, we got her to settle down and fall asleep. And so the nighttime wasn't too bad. We go to the first communion on Saturday, and this is when the misbehavior starts.
Yeah, she's taking after her old man.
She is just
goofing off in church.
That's right. No doubt she gets that from me. She was not interested in the First Communion at all. It was this great service, too, at this school where our niece goes, and it was really beautiful. And 16 girls getting their First Communion. It was really sweet, and they had these songs. But she was not interested, and she was getting very loud. We were telling her to use the inside voice and all of that, and she wanted nothing to do with it. And so I had to take her out. And
ejected.
Because it's my wife's side of the family, so I thought, I'll take the hit for the family. I'll take her out to the parking lot, and we went back to the vestibule, and we found this little living room area, and she was happy just to be out of there.
Is this her first ejection after picking up that second tee?
No, remember the Dada Doo-Doo story?
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Yeah,
that was her first ejection, yeah.
That's it.
So that's fine, whatever. go through the service, and then they have a reception, a party afterwards for our niece at this restaurant. And a couple of her friends were there, and they even had a babysitter for all the adults. It was a big party, much bigger than we were anticipating, and they kind of shut down this restaurant for the family. And it was great. They had a great meal, and they had a piano player, and it was a lot of fun, and the kids were playing together, and our daughter was easily the youngest. You know, these were 8-year-old girls, but she was running around with them having some fun. Well, it was funny because, and I posted this picture on Instagram. I'm at June's Miller on Instagram. There was this big cake for our niece for her first communion, and it was a chocolate cake, and our daughter loves chocolate, and she was wanting the cake the whole afternoon. For 3 hours, she wanted the cake. And I said, well, it's your cousin's cake, and so when they cut it for her, then she'll get the first piece, and then you'll get to have a piece. But we have to wait for them to cut it here for her. So she kind of understood that. Well, now they announce we're ready for the cake, and she's very excited, and she runs over to the table. And all the girls are around the table. And the restaurant workers say, we're going to take this in the back and cut it there, and then we'll serve it on plates to everybody. So they take the cake, the giant cake, from the table, and they take it into the back room, and all the little girls leave, except our daughter, who is in shock. She is staring now at this empty table.
I was told I was getting cake.
Yes. What happened to the cake? And I'm laughing because she's standing there, I'm telling you, for 5 minutes, staring at the empty table, just like,
devastated.
What the hell just happened? Where is this cake that I was promised? And it's a cute photo that I posted. It's just hilarious to me. She eventually got cake. Well, after the cake, we go outside, and some of the kids are playing outside on the patio. And I'm out there with her, and we're kind of going up and down the steps. And as she and I are out there, this mom brings one of the little girls out there to the top step. And I can tell something's wrong. And this little girl hurls projectile vomiting chocolate cake. It was just a stream of chocolate milk.
Oh, man.
Gross.
And our daughter's eyes get real big, and then the little girl stops projectile vomiting, pauses for about 5 seconds, then another gigantic projectile.
I couldn't
believe how much this girl had in her stomach. And I'm holding our daughter at this point, and after the second giant projectile vomit, she goes, uh-oh. And I said, see, that's what happens when you eat too much cake. So only have one piece, because I think that little girl had like 5 pieces of cake.
And now she's meeting the devil.
Yes. So for the rest of the trip, she kept repeating, little girl had too much cake. Only eat one piece of cake. So we get through that day. That evening is fine, and bedtime is fine. But she's still a little out of sorts because of travel, and she's not getting her nap during the day, and she's not getting as much sleep at night as she normally does.
Hey, playing on the road. It's tough.
Playing on the road. So now Sunday rolls around, and it's time to go home. But first, we have breakfast with our family up there, and she was not interested in that, so I had to chase her around the restaurant. She's starting the day off a little grumpy. Now we have to head to the airport. Get to the airport. I'm TSA pre, so I say I'll take her through security. And my wife and her folks went through the steerage line. So TSA is wide open, but she is not interested in it. She is all over the place, and the TSA security agent is helping me try to wrangle her, and she's just a handful. And I said, when you see mommy, say, I was a handful. So when we met up after security, she went up to her mom and said, I was a handful. Little did we know what a handful she was about to be. So as we're walking to the gate, my wife says, I have bad news. We're completely out of diapers. Mm-hmm. Well, we're in the middle of potty training her. So I said, well, that's okay, because we had plenty of underwear. And I said, if she wets her underwear or something, we'll just change underwear. Not a big deal. We'll get through this flight. So we're letting her wear diapers at night and underwear during the day, and she's been really good about telling us when she has to TT, but not when she has to doo-doo.
Is that the term you use?
Yes, TT and doo-doo. Yes. And very medical. When you have to TT, you tell mommy and daddy. When you have to doo-doo, you tell mommy and daddy. But she only does it when she has to TT. So it starts as we are heading to the gate, and she says, I have to TT. So my wife takes her into a bathroom that has one stall shut. It's out of order. There's a long line. Finally get in there, and I'm waiting for them out, and I just hear our daughter screaming bloody murder in that bathroom.
No.
And my wife is in there for a long time, wrestling with her on the floor, trying to change her, trying to put on the underwear, all of this. Takes her 5-10 minutes. She comes out looking shell-shocked, my wife, and everyone in line is giving her dirty looks, like, what took so long? Like, okay, well, let's just get on the plane. So we get on the plane. She's okay on the plane to start. She's got her tablet. And then after about an hour, she says, I have to TT. So I'm on the aisle, so I said, I'll take her. So I take her to the back, to the lavatory. You know how small those things are on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no room. She's really good TTing, and I clean the seat, and I put down some toilet paper. And I set her on there, and she goes. And it's still really, but she's kind of enjoying it, because when we walked in, it was a blue light on. And
yeah,
she kind of liked that, and she was fine with all that. So we get back to the seat. Then 5 minutes later, she says, I have to doo-doo. Okay.
You say I do too?
The way Mark that.
But, yeah. And yes, I said I have to too. But here's the problem.
Let's go mess that place
because
up.
She's not fully potty trained, when she tells us she has to doo-doo, that means she's just doo-dooed.
Oh, no.
And so I checked, and she had just doo-dooed into her underwear. So now,
mark that and play that out.
So now I said, okay, no problem, because we have spare underwear. So I take her to the back, and the other lavatory is open. So I open the door, and she goes, no, I don't want to go in there. I want to go in the blue one.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But this is the one we're going to go in.
Blues. Yeah, I said, well, this is the only one open, and we have to go in this one because we don't know how long this.
That's
no,
okay. We'll wait.
The blue one. Then she starts screaming and kicking as I'm trying to get her into the open lavatory. And she doesn't want to hear it. And there's a man back there who's also waiting now, and he opens the door for us. I said, see, this nice man is opening the door for us. This is going to be fun in here. This one can be blue, too. We're going to have fun in here.
No.
Didn't want to hear it. So that's how we start this venture into the lavatory. Me carrying her kicking and screaming.
I'm going to keep screaming. How about that?
Screaming at the top of her lungs, I set her on top of the toilet and, you know, put the lid down. I said, okay, I just have to change you here. We got to take off your shoes. No, I don't want my shoes off. Got to take off the shoes.
Oh, boy.
Then I don't want to put her on the filthy floor in her socks, so I keep her up there trying to wrestle with her as she's fighting all of this. I take her pants off. I take the dirty underwear off, and I just put the dirty, soiled underwear in the trash.
Yeah.
There's nothing else you can do with it. But it was a little bit of a messy one, so it's kind of, I'm getting, there's smearing. When she goes up against the wall, it's leaving mess on the wall.
Oh, geez. Toxic material here, and you're trying to wrestle at the same time.
Yes, and I'm trying to clean it at the same time, but she's fighting it. I feel like a rodeo cowboy in here, and I just can't get control of her, and I'm wiping, and I keep wiping her, and I keep needing more wipes and more wipes and more wipes, because it's like one of the worst she's ever had, and it's taking forever, and she's fighting it. And I finally get her what I think is clean enough, but she's still fighting it and screaming. And I said, we got to put on this new underwear. And then I look in the bag, and there's no underwear in there.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
So now I said, well, I got you as clean as I can. Let's just pull up these pants, and we'll go with it. You're going.
Teach her the word commando.
Yeah, you're going commando for the first time. I somehow get the shoes back on. This has been 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And she's still screaming. Now she's screaming for mommy. And I open the lavatory door, and there's a line of about 4 people. And I promise you.
So sorry.
The back third of the plane is all looking at us.
Oh.
Some of them have stood up. Some of them just heads whipped around. And I know that the half of the plane that is a parent understands.
Right.
And the half of the plane that isn't a parent is what I used to be before I was a parent, and that is, why can't this family get this kid under control?
They got a lot of hot takes.
Yes.
Did you announce to the whole crowd, oh, you don't even know the half of it. She's going commando right now, too. We're out of underwear.
Didn't announce that. But it was, I came back and sat down and I put her in my wife's lap and she started trying to watch her tablet. And my wife said she'd never seen me so shell-shocked that I was just staring off into space. I could not comprehend what I had just been through. So we still have an hour and a half left in the flight.
Oh, man. Yeah, you just started.
And she's okay now for the next 45 minutes or so. But then she gets tired of the tablet and she is announcing that she is ready to get off the plane right now.
Oh, no.
I want to get off the airplane right now. And she keeps going over and over. And when we explain we're still in midair, that is not a good enough answer for a two-year-old. So she starts screaming again. So now we have her in our seat in row 12 and she is screaming her head off. And that goes for probably 15 minutes. We cannot get her under control. No matter what I offer her, what deal I try to make with her, can't get her under control. It's just her screaming like crazy. And I can't even look around at this point.
No.
She finally settles down. We land. We get off the plane. Thank God we're off that plane finally. That was a 3-hour, 20-minute flight that felt like 30 hours.
You would have taken losing way too much altitude in just a matter of seconds over that.
Yes, the flight that I had 25 years ago where that plane almost crashed, that was much better than this flight. So we land, we have to go to baggage, and she's in no mood to stay in baggage.
No.
And so my wife says, I'll just take her outside. Where are we parked? I said, C7. Okay, I'll meet you there. Well, then after my wife leaves, I realize that as the luggage is coming off the carousel, we have the giant car seat bag.
Oh, man.
We have my bag. We have my wife's bag. And I have my big backpack. So I have four bags that I have to get. So I load up this. I put my backpack and the car seat on my back. And I'm grabbing both of our roller bags. And I think there was a P1 there in baggage claim because he was giving me kind of the P1 knowing look.
Yeah.
And he had to be privately cracking up at what a mule I was.
Yeah, that's what we are.
And I was shuffling at about a half a mile an hour from C28 to C7. And I must have looked like Steve Martin at the end of The Jerk when he's shuffling along with his hands full. And it took me forever to get down there. And I finally got there and just dropped all the bags and loaded them up. And then the car ride home, she was furious the whole car ride home. Get home. Finally get her in bed. My wife puts her to sleep because I've got to start watching the Mavs and Stars stuff that I missed.
Yeah.
And I don't really think my wife and I have spoken about it since then.
It's just too painful.
We're too traumatized.
Yeah.
That night we just kind of looked at each other and then went to bed and really didn't talk about it much yesterday because it was so traumatic. We finally had that flight that I have dreaded since becoming a parent. We were finally that family on the flight.
It's kind of like the Rangers after Game 6 of the World Series. They didn't talk about it for months.
Right.
Yeah.
And after really avoiding most of the terrible twos, we now got a face full of it over the weekend.
Boy, now you have the questions of how and when do we fly next?
So we have
can we ever win on the road again after something like this happens?
We have a trip scheduled in June, a flight, and I said to my wife, we're driving.
Yeah.
We're driving.
I think you have to at this point.
Because I have no interest.
Until she turns 4, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So when does it calm down on a flight?
I don't know. See, you're brave. As the father of 3, we never even attempted this until our 3rd one. And he was so used to just kind of going along with everything that he was fine. But we never even attempted it on our first couple. So, yeah, just attempting it, I give you really high marks. It does get better. And I would say, yeah, the potty training thing is a big one.
Yeah.
Because when you have the chance of that happening, the doo-doo disaster, that's just a wild card that you don't want to mess with, especially on the road.
No. I've never experienced anything like that.